I'm Council's Planning Manager. Thanks for attending today's Inner West Local Planning Panel. The Chairman, Angus Talbot, will formally open the meeting in just a moment, but first I just need to say a couple of things about the administration of the meeting. So ordinarily, the Council staff play a very limited role because the panel is independent of the Council. And that is still the case, but because of the strange circumstances that we find ourselves in, you'll notice myself and the other council staff are playing a bit more of an active role in the administration of the meeting, because we're using council's digital infrastructure a bit more heavily at the moment. So we're just trying to make sure that the minutes and deliberations can all be recorded properly, and for that to happen most efficiently, we need your help as well. So we need to ask everyone who's in attendance that they observe a standard of behaviour, which is probably not too dissimilar to our face-to-face meetings. So, can we ask that everyone does some of the following things, please? Just note that it's a recorded public meeting, so be mindful of your choice of words and wear appropriate clothing, and at least wear some clothing. Don't talk over each other, just one person talk at a time, and please mute your microphone when you're done speaking. Be patient and respectful of other speakers, and because we're using Zoom today and everyone can see each other, that includes visually respectful of each other as well. Try and minimize background disturbance like noise from children and dogs and things if you're working from home. And we realize how difficult that can be. Make sure you've got good, stable Wi-Fi or phone reception wherever you are, and just realise that the most important part is the audio when you're making a submission. So don't worry too much about the video feed if that's not working for you. Staff can help with this part of it if you need help. Just note also that the last few seconds after you log out of one of these conferences may be audible. So just wait until you're definitely logged out to make your true thoughts about the panel known. That's it for me for now. So we can help with technical inquiries and things like that if you needed to share plans or images or anything like that. But I'll hand over to the chairman. So the chairman formally facilitates the meeting and will enforce meeting procedures, including a limit on the number of speakers per item and a time limit for each speaker. So please follow the chairman's directions when participating. Thanks, Angus.
Matters. Welcome to the Inner West Local Planning Panel meeting. Firstly, I acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation on whose country we are meeting today and their elders, past and present. The panel consists of independent experts, as has been already said. And I will ask each of the panel members in a moment to introduce themselves and to indicate to you what their respective expertise is insofar as it relates to this type of meeting. I will also ask each panel member to indicate whether they have a declaration of interest to make in respect of any matter while they are about introducing themselves. We will be dealing with the items on the agenda as they appear in the papers in that order. Each matter will be, first of all, dealt with by me inviting the people to speak who have registered, as shown on the register of people to address the meeting. The time limit, strictly enforced, is 3 minutes. Normally, in more conducive times, the panel would attempt to confer and conclude and announce its decision following the presentation made by members of the public. Having regard to the rather difficult circumstances under which we are meeting, as Mr. Mertas has already indicated, the panel will actually defer once held the public meet to a time after the public meeting, straight after the public meeting, and will properly review the matters that have been put to it, rather than trying to do it in this rather obscure, remote type of way, which is different to normal. And then the decision will be published as soon as practicable, as soon as the minutes can be put together, on the council website. My name is Angus Talbot. I'm the chairman of the meeting. My background is many years as a solicitor, considerable number of years as a barrister, and I spent 15 years sitting on the Land and Environment Court bench. Since retiring at the statutory age, I have participated in a number of the meetings of the type that we're having today, as well as being a mediator in relation to certain matters and as a consultant. Now, what I will do now is ask each of the members to introduce themselves and indicate whether they have a declaration of interest. I formally declare that I have no perceived interest in any matter that I can see that's listed on the agenda or any person who is appearing or participating in this meeting. First person I'll ask is Ms. Jan Morrell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, all. Jan Morrell. I've been a town planner for over 40 years. My current work is only with independent panels, either as chair or as an expert member. I retired about 8 years ago, where I was employed by the Land and Environment Court as a commissioner for 14 years. And prior to that, I've held senior positions in both local government and the Department of Planning. Thank you. And I have no conflict of interest.
Thank you. The next person that I ask is Mrs. Mary Lynn Taylor.
Thank you and good afternoon to everybody. My name is Mary Lynn Taylor. I'm a planning lawyer and have been for some number of decades. And I'm also a chair of another panel and have been working with panels since the 1990s. Thank you. No conflict of interest to declare.
Thank you. Finally, Mr. Ken Hawke.
Good afternoon. My name's Ken Hawke and I'm the community panel member. I've lived in the Inner West for over 45 years. And I've worked in local government planning for 40 years, including 13 years before my retirement as director of planning at Marrickville Council. I have no conflict of interest in any of the matters before us today.
Thank you, panel members. We'll now proceed, as I indicated, proceeding first to item number one, which relates to the development application in respect of the property 7-9, Pennell Lane, Newtown. And the first person that I invite to speak is Ms. Sood. Are you there, Ms. Sood?
Yes, good afternoon. It's Mr. Sood. But that's
oh, okay. Mr. Vineet. Yes, thank you. Vineet Sood.
That's
and
right.
Living on the north side of Pennell Street, number 15. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Sood. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'd like to take the opportunity to say thank you for having the ability to speak at this meeting. Unfortunately, I'm going to take that opportunity to object to the proposal on a number of several different grounds. The first ground on which I'd like to object is the basis of parking in this area. It's probably well documented for those of you who live in the area and understand the dynamics that there is a great demand on parking. It's a very densely populated area. There are lots of people who work in the local area as well who use the parking. And as a father of two young children, both under the age of five, I have great difficulty often in parking my car anywhere close to my house, unfortunately, during the day and particularly in the evening. And of course, a development like this is only going to exacerbate that problem. In addition, the next point of my objection is in relation to the stature and structure of the proposed development. As a result of the fact that an additional level has been put onto the property. It will tower significantly above most of the other properties in the area, the majority of which, certainly from a residential perspective, are single storey. It therefore doesn't fit in with, the harmony of the surrounding area. But also, unfortunately, as a result of the natural topography of the land, this development will stand significantly higher than those buildings around it. What that means is that it will then also create a significant increased shadow on the properties around. And again, as I noted earlier, as a father with two young children, in particular for the properties on the north side of Pemmel Street, what that means is that what little sunshine is available, particularly in the winter months, will be significantly reduced. The third aspect of my objection is in relation to privacy. So obviously, on that side of the street, most of the houses are terraced. They have a good degree of privacy, given that most of the other properties are also single storey. But having this building have an additional floor added to it means that privacy is greatly reduced. And as a father, that significantly worries me. Even though not all the other properties are occupied by young families, I think given the nature of the way that the suburb is developing, the likelihood is that they will go on to have young families in the coming years. And obviously this development will encroach upon the privacy that is available to any families that move into the area. I'm not sure how much of my 3 minutes that I've used, but that's the key aspects of the points that I'd like to make. And again, I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity to make them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sood. Is there any questions from any member of the panel for Mr. Sood?
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Sood, please, if he's had an opportunity to read the council's assessment report.
I have, yes. I've read the report some weeks ago, but yes, I have.
Right, thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Sood?
No questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sood, for your assistance.
Thank you very much.
And the panel will, of course, take into account what you've just so succinctly put. The next persons listed are Jim and Tyrrell Hyman. I assume one or other of those persons will speak. Just noting Mr. Sood's concern about his time, there is a means of a signal, I understand, that will actually occur as the 3 minute expires. Is that right, Mr. Mertes? We got a signal?
Yes, sorry, I just had to take myself off mute. That's
got
right.
A signal 3 minutes?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Hyman, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
And who's speaking? You're speaking, are you, Mr. Hyman?
I am, Jim Hyman, yes.
And you're from 19 Pennell Street, and that also is to the south of the subject development. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm two doors away from Vernet.
Yes. Thank you very much. Your time starts now, Mr. Hyman.
Thank you. I'd like to refer to the statement of environmental effects that was provided by the developers. On page 5 to 9, of that document, the impact of the bulk and scale of the proposed development is considered. These pages carefully compare 7 Pemmel Lane with large buildings to the north, to the east, and to the west of the planned structure. The aim is to show that there are surrounding buildings of similar height to the new development. However, there is no mention of the residential properties to the south. That is, the properties whose frontage is on Pemmel Street and whose backyards adjoin the south side of 7 Pemmel Lane. The bulk and scale of this heightened structure will strongly impinge on the livability of our properties. To us in our backyards, this will be a seriously tall building. It will loom over us. It will significantly affect our quality of life. I feel very strongly that to use the height of the Enmore Theatre, a major commercial building, as a justification for the height of this new one, this residential building, is a bit of a false argument. That's a major commercial building up on the main road, up on Enmore Road. And to use it to justify the height extension of this building seems unfair. And it still seems extraordinary to me that the developers never seem to consider the effect their proposal will have on their neighbours to their south. My second point is that this seriously big development, this seriously big wall, as it appears to us, will also cast a seriously big shadow over our backyards. Quite simply, we will lose most of our winter sun after about 12:30. At the moment, we get pretty good sun in our backyard until late afternoon, but this will nearly all be lost. In the inner city, where backyards are small and often tiny, the loss of that much sun, that proportion of sun, is significant. So that's my second point. My third point is I would like people to consider that adjacent to this proposed development at 7 Pemmel Lane is number 5 Pemmel Lane, where a similar development happened about 4 years ago. But it is a much more sympathetic and considerate design than the one proposed at 7 Pemmel Lane. It is the same height. It goes up 3 levels as the proposed one on 7 Pemmel Lane, but the top level simply does not come as far south, so it doesn't loom over the neighbourhood. And the third level has got a pitched roof of such low angle that they have kept the height, the additional height, to a minimum. It's a sympathetic and considerate design for the people living south of that development. And I just can't see why the designers of 7 Pemmel Lane hadn't done the same sort of thing. Okay, so thank you for giving me permission to address the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Hyman. You do appreciate, of course, that if this building was to be built as if the controls within the zone applied, it could go up to 14 metres.
Yes, I do. I understand that.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Any other further questions? Ms. Morrell? You must be muted, I think.
She's muted.
Ms. Taylor?
No, thank you.
Mr. Hawke?
No questions, thank you.
Yes, thank you for your assistance, Mr. Hyman. And as I said earlier, the panel will certainly take into consideration the matters that you have indicated to us.
Thank you.
The next person is Michael Friedman. I hope I've pronounced that correctly.
It's actually Friedman, but you're not the first person to
Friedman. I'm not the first. Oh, that's a relief. Now, you're on the west at 14 Simmons, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So yes. The property overlooks the rear of my house.
Yes, I think you must understand we've all been to the site, so
we do. Oh, okay.
Yes, we've been there in rather different circumstances to usual, but we've managed to do it in our own time. Uh-huh. So thank you, Mr. Friedman.
Okay, so it begins now. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak and to have this open meeting. Like Mr. Sued and Mr. Hyman mentioned, my main concern is the structure and the stature of the building. And I do acknowledge that within the old planning regulations that it was built under, that it can go up to 14 metres and that they are below that height. But when consideration is given to the residential nature of the buildings around it, I think it's rather drastically imposing on everything. And the privacy of the rear gardens and the rear houses to the west of the property, we'll have people overlooking us at any time of day or night. I acknowledge that there's certain requirements for privacy for bedrooms, but in my objection letter I noted that in some of the plans it doesn't look like the top level are bedrooms for all of the units or townhouses. So I'm not sure if that's been taken into consideration with the privacy of the level of the windows. Also, the shade cover that's going to come from the height of the structure is going to block off or reduce the amount of sunlight that's coming into my main living areas, and I assume the other properties to me, the only side of light that I get is going to be blocked from that shadow there. So between the, I mean, a semi and the windows are between number 12 and 14. There's a small alleyway between there, and there's a rear-facing window that goes there. So the garden would be in just about constant shadow, and the shadow lines from the shadow report that was provided looks to be moving from about halfway across the garden to about halfway across the house for the winter ones. I acknowledge there was change to the height, but I haven't seen any updated shadow reports that I believe were being provided yesterday. Do they get provided to everyone, I suppose, is my open question. So, and then the other point that Mr. Hyman mentioned with number 5, although it is higher from the ground level, the way it's been designed is it's actually lower than the current roof apex at the moment of number 7 to 9. So an additional story above what is there would be significantly larger and impinging on what is predominantly a residential area. And heritage buildings at that, all of single layer. I think that's the main points I wanted to make. I think you're on mute, Mr. Talbot, if you're speaking.
Yes, sorry. Is that better?
Yes, better.
You mentioned that it was the previous controls that allowed 14 metres. The understanding of the panel is that it's the current controls that allow 14 metres. So that that's a slightly different aspect to it.
Sorry to interrupt, but is that based on the fact that it's using the 4-part test for existing use?
No. No, if it was being judged without existing use, it could be judged on the basis of a maximum height of 14 metres.
Right.
And just so that there's no misunderstanding about any new plans that came in, the amendments were deemed to be in favour of those who were concerned about the development, and accordingly in those circumstances, it's not obligatory to re-advertise the whole application. So just to be aware of, there's no sleight of hand going on. Thank you for your help, Mr. Friedman. And the panel will, of course, consider what you've put. But first of all, I'll just make sure that there's no further questions.
No questions.
Thank you.
No questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Friedman. The next person is Peter O'Shea, representing the applicant. Are you there, Mr. O'Shea?
Yes, I am. Have you got me?
Yes, got you. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you. I'd just like to say hello to the chairperson and the panel and all the other attendees today. I am the author and applicant of the DA that we're discussing today. This development was firstly mooted at a pre-DA back in the end of 2017, where a couple of facade options were presented to council, and we took the preferred option from council and have further developed the project. As we're all aware, I've taken advantage of the existing use rights rather than going back and using the R4 density ratio, and so that's why it's going to be developed under existing use rights, which is just for multiple occupancy or multiple dwellings. The advantage of this is that we've just used the existing footprint of the building and used that as our basis and made amelioration, made amendments as we've needed to abide by all the setback requirements. These have resulted in what I would describe as fair and equitable shadow casting and privacy results. I understand the concerns of the neighbours. No one likes development going on near them. But I think we've managed to ameliorate most of the concerns that are generally involved with most of these concerns, which is, you know, shadow bulk of the building, shadowing, privacy. And to the best of our endeavours, we've managed to do something that I think, and the council officers have also responded favourably in their assessment report. I'll make myself available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. O'Shea. Ms. Morrell, any questions?
No questions, thank you. No.
Mrs. Taylor?
No, thank you.
Mr. Hawke?
Yes, I'd like to ask about the proposed screens on the windows on the west elevation.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, they're shown in plan on the top two floors, but they're not shown in elevation. Could you give us a description of what you're planning to put there?
They are louvered shutters. So the idea is that we, they're a requirement of the BASICs. So because of the sun loading and also to provide privacy, they will be horizontal pivoting louvers, which would mainly be directed up or down as the case may be to keep the sun out and also to create the privacy that's preferred by the neighbours.
Would you have any problem if they were fixed into a horizontal type space?
That might be an option. I just think if they were fixed, we'd have to orientate them up, so obviously so we'd capture the sun.
Yeah.
I think there is a possibility there to alter them from as long as the BASICs requirement allow me for that, because at the moment the BASICs is based, the approval of the BASICs is based on them being adjustable.
So you wouldn't object to that?
I don't think I would have any objections, no.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. O'Shea.
Yeah.
The panel will make its determination following this public meeting for the reasons that I explained earlier. Thank you for your presentations. The second matter that comes before the panel has been withdrawn. That's the second matter in the agenda. Moving on to the third matter, that relates to the proposed development at 3 Hosking Street East, Balmain. And the first person who's listed to speak on behalf of the applicant is Andrew Wilson. Now, you're presumably an architect, are you, Mr. Wilson? No answer. I take it I'm live, am I?
Yes.
Thank you, but I think he has
absconded.
All right, well,
I'm just looking at his feed and his chair is empty, so he may have
Matthew
just
Benson. Away. Is Matthew Benson here?
Matthew, you're on mute.
Yes, I'm off mute now. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you. You're the planner, Mr. Benson?
Correct.
Thank you. Is Mr. Wilson indisposed, or do you have any...
I'm sorry that I just don't know.
All right, thank you.
A limitation of our setup, I guess. I'm sorry about that.
Your 3 minutes starts now.
Okay, as set out in the Clause 4.6 written request regarding density that I prepared, the proposed extension provides for a streetscape outcome more consistent with the established streetscape than the existing development on the subject site. So on the northern side of Hosking Street, we have built to boundary construction consistently for the whole street, but this subject site has a rather unkempt area that is unbuilt upon, to one side and that lacks proper connection to the building itself. So it's likely to continue to be in that state. I would say that the assessing officer's summary of the Clause 4.6 written request arguments does not actually mention the argument that a better streetscape outcome is provided, yet that is actually a central argument in the Clause 4.6 written request. And so we're regarding that omission as really not an accurate reflection of the 4.6 written request. In relation to the degree of non-compliance with the density standard, the assessing officer states that the existing lower level car parking should be counted as gross floor area because the LEP definition of gross floor area excludes car parking to meet the requirements of the consent authority. Our submission is that the garage was constructed several decades ago and that indeed the way that the wording is phrased is that the relevant consideration is not whether council's current controls require car parking, but whether the car parking when it was built was provided to meet council's requirements. That car parking is not currently proposed to be affected by this current proposal. Additionally, I would say the car parking area is at basement level and may be characterised as basement level storage, vehicular access and loading area. I say it's at basement level.
We've read that submission and we understand it.
Okay. Well, I was just, I know you've received a written version of what I'm saying.
Yes.
And I'm just reading it. I thought that that was what I was meant to do.
Better for you.
Okay. The assessing officer states that the proposed development doesn't comply with site coverage and landscaping standards. I've asked the project building designer to address those aspects. I note that the assessing officer talks about a slab area in front of the proposed addition, excluding it from being defined as landscaped area. However, I don't see any evidence that area is actually on slab. And the assessing officer argues that the proposal involves unacceptable removal of natural rock outcrops. However, the areas where the proposed development is proposed does not feature rock as a visible landscape feature. It's just simply excavation into an area of land rather than actual rock outcrops. So we don't see that concern is valid. The submitted Clause 4.6 written request argues that site coverage and landscaped area requirements are satisfied. Now, I know that that is in dispute and the project designer will address those aspects. However, our submission is that the only basis upon which the density of the proposal could be deemed unacceptable in circumstances in which there is compliance with site coverage and landscaped area would be if the scale of the development was excessive. Yet very clearly, the scale of this proposal is either consistent with or lesser than other buildings in the streetscape. That is what we are submitting in relation to the Clause 4.6 written request. And in summary, the main thing that we are saying is that this proposal does result in a more consistent streetscape outcome than what exists, and that the Clause 4.6 written request on density is therefore worthy of support.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Has Mr. Wilson returned? I see he's on the screen.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, Mr. Wilson, you wish to address the meeting? Oh, just before we go with Mr. Benson, Mrs. Taylor, have you got any questions for Mr. Benson?
Thank you.
Ms. Morrell? Ms. Morrell? Gone.
Jan, you're on mute.
Mr. Ho.
No questions, thank you.
Thank you. Well, so Mr. Wilson, You wish to address the meeting?
Yes.
Please start now. Your 3 minutes starts now. Thank you.
As discussed, the garage floor area could be argued that it's excluded from the floor space ratio. Councils also addressed the existing ceiling height, the first floor level, and if they argue that it's not habitable space, so therefore that floor could also be excluded from the floor level. There has been no objections from neighbours, even though the application has been notified twice. There's no overshadowing issues, mostly overshadows the street. Most of the street has been built from boundary to boundary, which is shown on each side. The argument with the landscaped area, I thought was unfair and unreasonable. The argument was that the rock face was not included in deep soil landscaping in the proposed, but it was included in the existing landscaped area, which was a bit unfair and unreasonable. The client also, due to health issues, requires a lift to go from each floor from the four stories of the boundary, four stories of the height. And the client has also made, we've also made significant compromises in regards to the height and the street setback. That the existing landscaped area to the front of the boundary is not on concrete. It's got a tree growing out of it. And we would like, on behalf of the client, would like for council to considering supporting the application. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Have we lost Ms. Morrell, have we?
No, I'm here now. Have you lost me?
You got any questions?
No, thank you.
You're back now. You got no questions. Mrs. Taylor?
Thank you.
Mr. Hawke?
No questions, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The matters that you've raised will, of course, be considered by the panel, and the outcome will be published on the website in due course. We move now on to matter number 4 on the agenda. That relates to the property 27 Kintore Street, Dulwich Hill. Now, there's a number of people here who look as though they may well be addressing the same subject. There's Mr. Carter, the architect, Mr. Mead, the planner. There's a solicitor. You need leave to get to address the panel if you wish to address on legal matters. And there's Emily Joseph. Now, is each one of these people going to speak, or is someone, are they just here for questions?
No, the Sean Carter, the architect, will speak. Jeff Mead, the planner, will speak. And Claire Collette, the lawyer, will speak. Emily Joseph won't speak.
If she gets leave. We've got a legal submission that's already been made. Why do we need to hear? It's a requirement of the rules that I give leave to Claire Collette to speak.
If I could request leave to speak, please, on the basis that whilst Mills Oakley did submit a legal submission in relation to the first DA, we've now reviewed Council's assessment report in relation to the modification application, and our initial letter of advice is now a little outdated, as the council assessment report is not pressing the issue of the easement. So I would request leave to address the panel on just two issues, namely first the relevant provision of the Marrickville Development Control Plan, which is to be applied, and second, some comments in
the
council.
That's a planning matter. That's a planning matter. That's not a legal matter. Addressing the DCP is just a factual issue that I'm sure is a matter that's going to be addressed by either Mr. Carter or Mr. Mead.
We were of the view that the application of the wrong part of the DCP was an error of law. If the panel doesn't hold that view, then I won't press that issue. And our planner, Jeff Mead, can make some comments. But we're of the view that I wanted to ensure that the correct provision of the DCP was applied, and that was a legal issue. And the second point was to address council's comments in relation to the reasonableness of the imposition of the conditions. In relation to the Newbury test and the case of Lorenzato and Burwood Council.
Newbury test still going, is it?
We did propose that, if possible, the architect and the planner speak first, and I would just conclude briefly with those points if you are willing to grant leave.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that we really need to hear from a legal aspect, but let us hear first of all the architect and the planner, and I'll reconsider when they've completed their address to the panel.
Okay, thank you.
First of all, and what I hadn't picked up is you're a different solicitor to the person who gave the legal opinion that we've read in support of the application.
That was a Mills Oakley advice, which was prepared by Anthony Wheeling, who is the partner who I work with. I'm a special counsel in his team, and Anthony is involved in a court matter today and wasn't able to appear in person. So I'm essentially appearing on his behalf.
All right, thank you. Mr. Carter.
Thank you. I'm Sean Carter, the Principal Architect of Carter Williamson Architects, and
thank
I'm
you.
Speaking on behalf of Emily Joseph, the client today. And I'll speak first. We lodged this application, or this section 4.5, to demonstrate that we did not agree with Council's position through the negotiation of this DA through Council, nor as it was imposed through the consent. We disagreed with Council's position simply because this pipe was never acknowledged on the property title, nor in the contract of sale, nor any document my client could reasonably have obtained through the sale process. I will note to the panel that this was a heavily contested auction, where no one at this auction knew of this pipe, and if they had have, they may not have paid the considerable sums that they did. In any case, just because my client lodged a DA for this site, she has had to experience an onerous cost and time delay. The conditions that are onerous being the placement of an easement on my client's property where no easement existed before, and requires modified pipe path as directed and approved by council. Council has effectively held my client, Emily Joseph, to ransom. As the preschool is a commercial venture with the need for the old dilapidated cottage requiring substantial upgrade to be compliant as a Class 9B building, Emily was left with no alternative but to enact the conditions she had imposed and get on with building her school so she could hopefully be open for the beginning of school in February 2021. We lodged this section 4.5 in the hope of a quick resolution, but none was forthcoming. Council has refused to engage with us on bearing the costs of this pipe or whether this pipe could simply have just remained in place as it was originally. It has taken Council 7 months to deal with this section 4.55 before you today. This has meant Emily has had no choice but to relocate the pipe so her construction could begin. So really our application before you today is effectively to require council to pay the cost to relocate the pipe as they have conditioned, as it should never have been a cost of Mike Fine. Not to mention the significant delay in time this pipe has caused the project, which has had a very real commercial cost to the operation of the school. That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Mr. Hawke?
No questions.
Mrs. Taylor?
No questions.
Ms. Morrell?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Now, we now have... oh no, we've done Mr. Carter and Mr. Mead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, panel members. Jeff
yes,
Mead.
Mr. Mead, thank you.
Jeff Mead, planning consultant for the applicant. Mr. Chair, I'll just start with the comments in relation to your comments at the opening about the council no longer requiring an easement for this pipe to sit within. That statement is correct. The council staff have accepted that no easement is required. That said, every other aspect of relocating this pipe, being the aspects that will cause expense to our client, are still required. So this issue is not about the easement anymore. It's about relocating council's pipe, and we say there's no basis for requiring that. Firstly, we say that there's a false premise.
If I can
make my commentary, Mr. Chair, I'll go to that issue. Firstly, it's our view that there's a false premise for imposing the condition. The staff report says that relocation of the pipe is required, and states essentially it's a mandatory condition for that pipe to be relocated to serve its purpose. Alternatives have been provided to council right through this process by hydraulic experts to show that there's absolutely no need to move this pipe to serve its purpose. So we say it's a false premise on which the condition has been imposed. Secondly, the alternative that's been chosen by council is that alternative that is at the applicant's cost of relocating the pipe versus the alternative we put to council, which was to encase the pipe, which is not an unusual approach to these situations, to encase the pipe. So in perpetuity, it could sit and not require maintenance over the course of time. So we say there's an alternative to what's to the condition. Second point is that council relies on the DCP provision, and this is what the legal advice also goes to. A DCP provision to require relocation of the asset. If we actually read that provision, the provision relates to new buildings and structures. It says that new buildings and structures will not be permitted to build over an easement or existing drainage infrastructure. This proposal has been an alteration and addition project, maintaining the existing building and adding to it. The additional encroachment on the pipe is minor, and it remains that whether the building stays on site as it always was, or we alter and add to it, there will be a building sitting over that council infrastructure. And so we say that the DCP provision simply does not apply because the provision relates to new buildings and structures. In any case, if the panel was to find against us on that, the control must be flexibly applied. This is a DCP control, and per section 4.15 of the Act must be flexibly applied and in light of the objectives of the control. The staff report, curiously, doesn't go to the objectives of the control. The objectives of the control, and I'll just paraphrase them very quickly, are to protect the urban environment from the effects of uncontrolled surface stormwater flows, to minimise or negate disruption and danger to both pedestrian and vehicular traffic, and to protect the quality of receiving waters adjacent and downstream land use and the rights of adjacent and downstream landowners. The report not only doesn't deal with these objectives of the control, but in our view, these objectives simply cannot be offended by the proposal. retaining a pipe in its place, the status quo, so to speak. So essentially, if you were to properly apply that control, even if it did apply, you would find that the objectives of it are met. The staff report, when the development initially was approved, and the current report make that same failing. And we made submissions on this to the panel when the application was originally proposed, that there is an alternative being put by the applicant at their expense, the encasement of the pipe at their expense, which serves the objectives of the control. Finally, as I said at the outset, council staff now agree that an easement's not required, but are requiring that we do absolutely everything else in terms of the drainage infrastructure and to implement that at the applicant's cost. These works are not required to support the proposal. They are works that council desire to relocate their pipe. They're not required as a product of this application. And you'll see in the staff report, there's no suggestion by council's engineers that it's not possible to keep the pipe in place. Simply, the council staff seek to impose that requirement. It's not about an issue with its performance and so on. Finally, to close, the proposals for a small community-based childcare centre, a 20-place childcare centre in an existing building that's being adaptively reused and added to serve that purpose. The relocation of council's infrastructure, which is not in an easement to start with, at the applicant's cost for a community-based proposal like this, we say is unreasonable, not just in planning terms, but in terms of serving the public interest. Essentially, what we seek of the panel is to insert one sentence at the end of condition 28B. And that sentence would say that the costs of this relocation are to be borne by council. The application was lodged in December 2019, and you will say, why did the applicant go on and invoke the and on the consent and so on? Simply because the project would have fallen over if we didn't. We expected when we lodged the modification that it was a modification that could be dealt with quickly. Here we are 7 months later having the discussion, and that's why the modification we're putting to you by inserting that one sentence about cost is slightly different to our original application, which talked about not imposing the easement and, in fact, maintaining the pipe where it was. The project commenced and had to go on. It would have fallen over otherwise, and that's why the request is what it is, to simply shift those costs of relocating council's own infrastructure at its cost rather than the applicant's.
Thank you, Mr. Mareed. It's true to say, is it not, that what's proposed and what is in fact being built on the site at the moment is a entirely new building or structure, as you elect to call it, but it's really an entirely new building at the rear, isn't it?
It's the way we would describe it is alterations and additions to an existing building to serve the new purpose.
There's nothing there before you started, was there? There was no structure there.
Yes, there was a house on the site which has been adaptively.
No, I'm talking about in the middle of the site, the rear of the site, where you're putting in the new.
As I said earlier. Yes, there is an addition to the house that was on the site that sat over the pipe. There is an addition to the rear of that house.
All right, thank you. Mrs. Taylor, do you have any questions?
I have one, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morrell.
As I understood, Mr. Carter, the pipe has already been relocated.
We had no alternative but to relocate the pipe so the project could start.
So the pipe's been relocated. Okay. And can I, not that it will make any difference, but I would like to inquire as to what that you're putting that cost at. I mean, these works have already been done that you're now asking for retrospective payment for.
Correct.
Without specifying the amount.
Yeah, and can you tell me what the amount was then?
I don't have all the consultant information, the consultant costs together, but the costs for relocation, I believe, was about $75,000.
They're actually seeking a retrospective approval, as I understand it then, for a modification.
We would be accepting counsel to bear the cost and then enter into a conversation with the client to pay that cost, and the books would be open, so counsel would set the book costs that Emily has had to pay, and there would be an agreement that counsel would pay those costs.
Thank you. Mr. Hawke? Oh, no, sorry, are you finished, Ms. Burrell?
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Hawke?
No further questions, thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Now, getting back to Ms. Collette, do you feel, is Ms. Collette there somewhere?
Yes, I am.
Yes, thank you. Do you feel there's any need to elaborate on what's already been said? After all, the question of the DCP was adequately addressed. Is there anything that you would also like to reiterate?
Thank you for the opportunity. I won't press the DCP issue, which we say the wrong provision has been applied and the one for existing structure should be applied. What I would like to make just a short comment on is in relation to the reasonableness of the conditions proposed requiring our client to pay for all the works, and refer the panel to a case of Lorenzato and Burwood Council, a 2017 case, where the facts were very similar to this, near identical. It was a DA.
Who decided it?
Commissioner Brown decided it. Mm-hmm. It was a near identical case. It was alterations and additions to a house, and Burwood Council imposed conditions such as these, relocating the pipe and the imposition of the easement. And in a fairly short and concise judgment, Commissioner Brown found that, and I quote, he had little trouble in accepting that the conditions in dispute should not be included on any approval for a number of reasons. And the reasons I would submit that those conditions were not held to be lawful in the Lorenzato case would apply to the facts in this case. The first being that the conditions don't satisfy the Newbury test because they don't relate to the permitted development. Council in their assessment report say that the conditions relate to the development because the development requires the pipe to be removed, to be relocated. However, we say that there is no requirement for the pipe to be relocated. There is nothing in the DCP requiring the pipe to be relocated or any other reason for it to be relocated. Our client's development does not rely upon this stormwater pipe or use the pipe. It's a pipe servicing the broader suburb, but a pipe that they're not feeding into. And as such, as the court held in Lorenzato, the conditions requiring the removal and bearing the cost of the relocation, don't relate to the DA in question. In Lorenzato, the court also said that the conditions were so unreasonable that they could not reasonably be imposed. The court also looked at proportionality, and the commissioner found that for the alterations and additions to one house, requiring an applicant to carry out expensive works on a pipe which benefited a broader area was not proportional. I would suggest that that's the case in this situation as well. The court also looked at the relevant stormwater code, which in Burwood Council was phrased in very similar terms to the current one, and found that a provision in the code which referred to new buildings and structures was not the provision which should be applied to alterations and additions DA, and that found that in that case there was an error in applying that that provision in the relevant code.
Anything else you want, Lee?
That is all I would ask the panel to consider.
If I've got round to talking about the DCP. Sorry, you went out at that moment. I think we were, I was talking over you, so could you just repeat your last remark?
That's fine. I was simply saying that I'd ask the panel to consider the Lorenzato case.
Does anybody, sorry. Ms. Morrell?
Chair, I'd just like to ask one question.
Thank you.
Yes.
So which provision in the DCP, which we'll look at later, what provision in the DCP are you saying should be applied?
So it's clause 2.25.3.13. I can repeat that again if you like.
No, 2. I've got it. Yep, okay. I've got it.
Council's assessment report say they rely upon clause C31, which relates to new building and structures. But
can I just ask you here, new buildings and structures, well, look, these are new structures over, even though it's an alteration and addition, it seems to me that it's a structure over the pipe, whereas it didn't exist before.
Well, we would say that C33, which states that if there is an existing structure over the drainage line, there's to be access pits provided. That is the relevant provision because it refers to existing structures. And therefore excludes C31. And also in Lorenzato, that is what the court found for an alterations and additions DA, in that case, that a DCP provision relating to new buildings and structures was not the relevant one, which should be applied. So we'd be seeking to have that precedent applied.
Ms. Collette, have you looked at the plans?
I have had a look at the plans, yes.
And you recall the question I put to Mr. Mead about the building at the rear or the structure at the rear that's entirely new, is it not?
That's correct. The building is being extended at the back, but we would still say that the consent refers to an alteration and addition.
All right. Okay, I think I understand that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your assistance, Ms. Collette, and the panel will take into account what you've put and consider it.
Thank you for the leave.
Emily Joseph, is she here?
Sean Carter, the architect here. I spoke on behalf of Emily. Emily will not be speaking.
I see. Thank you very much. And as I indicated before, the panel, under the circumstances, will consider this after we've heard from the other speakers in the other matters, and the outcome will be published on the website. Thank you for your assistance.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, panel, for your time.
The next matter that comes up is matter number 5, and that relates to the property 101 Hubert Street, Lilyfield. The first person to speak in relation to that property is Chris Carr. Mr. Carr here?
Yes, I'm here.
Carr, I'm here. Thank you. We've read the submissions that have been made by you and Ms. Ford on two occasions at least. Do you still wish to address us or just endorse?
Happy to endorse. So I guess what I would like to do is just maybe ask you if you had any questions for me, I suppose, but also just reinforce the fact that the challenges we've got with the rear boundary of the new development, we don't believe that it is considering the shadowing and privacy effects, given that there's such a differential between those two rear lines, the actual rear line of our home versus the proposed one.
I think we understand your argument. I'll just see if any members of the panel wish to discuss it with you. Ms. Morrell? You're muted, Ms. Morrell.
I'll do that. I guess.
Right. Is there anything you wish to discuss with Mr. Carr?
No, thank you.
Mrs. Taylor? Is that a no, was it?
That was a no, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to bring your attention. Mr. Joseph Panetta was a late registration.
Yes, I've got that.
I just wanted to make sure you were working off the
yes,
new list.
Yes, I've got the right
okay.
list. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have no question.
No question?
Nothing.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Panetta and Panella.
Panetta.
Hello.
Yes, where are
Hi.
You?
Yes.
Thank you. You wish to address the meeting. I'm allowing you to do so, particularly yeah. in relation to the matters raised by Mr. Carr and Mrs. Ford.
Yes, I just really wanted to answer any questions that the panel may have. I know that you have been out on site, and I also know that you have assessed the application. So my and just to see if you had any questions. Or
well, the panel members will have some questions, I think, in relation to the setback of the rear alignment and to the question of the roof structure. Mr. Hawkes, have you got any questions in relation to this?
Yes, Mr. Panetta, are you aware that the council officers have recommended a change in the pitch of the roof from 45 degrees to 30 degrees? And do you have a response to that?
Yeah,
are we talking about the right application?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yes. We are aware of that.
Yes, this is Hubert Street, Lilyfield.
Sorry, I thought you were on Foucault.
Beg your pardon?
I thought you were on Foucault. I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry, we have spoken to
that's you. Next.
Thank you. Got it now.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, the roof pitch change, and we're fine with that.
You're happy to take that on board?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, thank you.
May I ask a question then?
Yes, Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Panetta, the change to the roof, is it only the area of the roof at the rear or is it the area of all of the change in degree?
I believe it's to both roofs and we're fine with that.
And you're fine with that, are you? Thank you very much.
Let's be clear, both roofs are to have a 30 degree gradient or roof. Is that what you're telling the panel you'd be prepared to accept?
Yes, correct.
All right, thank you.
Can I just ask one question?
Yes, Ms. Morrell, most certainly.
No, now that you've accepted it, probably is rather obsolete, the question, but nonetheless, do you see that, Mr. Panetta, as the way to achieve or mitigate impacts as opposed to, say, a hip roof at the rear of the section, at the rear of the roof?
Look, I assist with impacts. I also would like to call your attention to the other developments on Hubert Street and the fact that we did have an earlier approval for a larger site with three very similar dwellings on Hubert Street, 3 to 80. That project an originator for the air for that street, and since then council have followed that or have they actually asked us to follow that style of building. It's really the reason why you have a design of a building that you have in front of you. It's a type of design that's been replicated along Hubert Street at council's request.
Thank you. Thank you for your assistance, Mr. Panetta, and the panel will take into account the concession that you've made and consider whether that meets the requirements that have been indicated by Mr. Carr. And the ultimate decision will appear on the council's website, as I've already said. Moving now on to item number 6, which relates to the property 104 Foucault Street, Roselle. And the first person I'm asking to speak there. Well, first of all, I'll clarify, Mr. Slattery and Mr. Best, do you both wish to speak in relation to this matter? They're not there.
I think it's Miss Slattery.
Yes. Yes, maybe. Genevieve.
Hello.
Miss Slattery, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Chair. Thank you.
And are you there also with Mr. Aaron Best?
Oh, I'm here also.
Yes, do you both wish to speak?
Would you like Genevieve to speak first, if possible, and then I'd be available to answer any questions from the panel.
All right. Okay. Miss Slattery?
Thank you very much, and good afternoon. I'm the applicant's town planning consultant. The DA before you proposes alterations and additions to a semi-detached dwelling. This site is particularly challenging due to its east-west orientation. There's a three-storey house to the north, and the rear of the property is some 4.2 metres above the front of the site. As a consequence, natural sunlight is minimal to the existing house. So the intent of this DA was to undertake some alterations essentially to improve the internal amenity, with particular regard to solar access. As you'd see from the report before you, Council's recommended approval subject to two design changes, and I'd just like to speak to those changes briefly if I could. Condition A relates to alterations proposed to a front window at ground floor level. That window is to the living room of the dwelling, and you'll see from the floor plans that it's a very small space. The architect, and currently it achieves very minimal sunlight, the architect has designed a solution which maintains the existing window proportions and has proposed a white frosted glass surround in order to provide some additional eastern sunlight into that room. Council's recommended deletion of this element. I note that the site is not a heritage item. It's not in a heritage conservation area, and the proposal will maintain the proportions of the existing window so as to complement the existing semi. So on that basis, we're requesting that that condition is deleted. The second condition, condition B, relates to the rear setback at ground floor level, and Council has recommended that the setback be increased from 4.029 to 6 metres. As I've mentioned previously, the rear of the site is some 4.2 metres above the front.
Does the panel want to hear the submission?
I can hear it.
Yes,
I do. Do you want to hear this submission on this point?
I don't know.
No worries, keep going.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The design has been carefully massaged in order to achieve light and ventilation into this new bathroom and laundry via the small adjoining courtyard. The rear addition is not able to be seen from any other property. It's well below the level of the boundary fence, and it sits below a private open space deck at the first floor level above. We believe that the condition is onerous and unreasonable, and it doesn't provide any amenity gains to any adjoining properties, but indeed amenity losses to the applicant. So on that basis, we're requesting deletion of both design modification conditions A and B.
Thank you, Ms. Slattery. Any questions, Mrs. Taylor?
No, thank
you. Mr. Hawke?
No questions.
And Ms. Morrell?
No questions, thank you.
Thank you for your assistance, Ms. Slattery.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Best, Aaron Best, architect.
Yes. Aaron Best from Aaron Best.
Aaron, sorry. Proceed. You've got 3 minutes.
Yeah, look, I think Genevieve's covered everything.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Just exposing yourself to questions, are you? Is that all? Mr. Hawke?
Yes. Could I just ask Mr. Best whether he's confident that the amount of excavation required will not cause any complications with the properties adjacent?
Yeah, so as part of the DA application, we had a structural engineer put together a structural design for piling along the boundary. There's been a structural solution put in place that would mitigate any potential issues with the neighbouring retaining. So the engineer visited both sites on either sides as he was designing the solution.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else want to ask a question?
Just one very quickly. The condition that you had concerns about, I'm just looking at the page numbers now. I wrote it down.
The frosted window one.
What number was that again?
A, I think.
A.
Can you just take the page number, Miss Slattery?
Sorry, Miss Morell, I just
pulled that up. 360s.
314.
314. Thank you. You've got it already. Okay. So A.
Thank you.
Okay. So you're asking for that to be deleted.
Both conditions A and B.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sorry. Yep.
Well, everything under design change, or does it go over the page?
That's right. There's two parts to that condition, some parts A and B.
The deletion you want starts with the heading design change.
That's correct.
Mm.
Could I ask Mr. Best to give us a little more description of the condition A proposal?
The condition A for the front window, yeah. Yeah, look, so we had to come up with a solution with respect to the streetscape character objective from the DCP. So the idea was that we create a bigger opening, and that opening is essentially filled with either a frosted or opaque kind of glazing or a damp-blown structure or polycarbonate structure material. That would sit flush with the existing white brickwork, which would basically camouflage itself against the brickwork. I mean, in essence. And then within that larger opening, we would basically mimic the existing proportions of the existing window with a double hung window within that opening. So the idea was that, in appearance from across the street, it would still have the proportions of the existing window matching the neighbour's window.
But would it just be decorative or would it actually be used as a window?
Well, just having that larger opening with the frosted glazing would allow more ambient light into the space. It's a very dark existing space in there. The ground floor is the main living space for the occupant. It has a very small courtyard. With the raised landscape area above, there's very little light that can get down into that space.
How wide is that distance from the wall back to the window?
From the existing wall back to the
wall of the street back to the window?
I think from memory, it's quite narrow. It's about, 1,200 mil, maybe? 1,200 to 1,500 mil?
It's about 1,500. I'm just going off the plans here.
Mm. All right. Any further questions?
No further questions.
Yes, thank you for your assistance, Ms. Slattery and Mr. Best. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the matter will be the subject of discussion by the panel following this meeting, and the determination will be published on the council website as soon as practicable. Thank you for your assistance. That, as I understand it, concludes the public meeting, and accordingly the panel members will reconvene just as soon as they're in private session. Someone will tell us when we are.
Might I suggest, sorry Angus, this is Tina here. Is it locked?
Sorry?
No, I'm just checking. Kathy or Claire, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm just checking, making sure, seeing who the participants are. Looks like it's just solely us, so there's no one from the public here.
Okay, and it says that the heading locked. Does that mean now it's blocked to anybody else joining?
Just hold on a moment. Hold on a minute. Cancel. Sorry, one.